Welcome to 1 hour of the toughest, roughest wrestling you'll ever see.
That's right, Dick the Bruiser, set it off.
The big question, have you got the endurance? Have you got the brains to get past the excellence of execution?
Where are all the gutless American wrestlers? Step in the ring with the Baron and face the brave.
The reason why Ax and myself were put on this earth is to demolish people.
Bobby Heenan, that is a very good-looking sport coat you've got on.
Yeah, and I paid for mine. Mine isn't government issue.
Yellow, everybody. Lance Russell and Dave Brown right along ringside. By golly, we're ready to go with another big week of championship wrestling.
Greetings, wrestling fans, and welcome to Wrestling Nostalgia. I am your host, Dave Dynasty. Thank you for joining us. We have a great episode for today. Our guest is Justin Race, the son of Harley Race. If you saw the recent Dark Side of the Ring episode on Harley Race, you saw Justin all over that episode. I have a great chat coming up with him later in the show. You're going to fully enjoy that. Before we get there, let's take care of some business. Wrestling Nostalgia is available on all podcast platforms. So make sure whatever your choice is, whatever you're listening on now, get a rate, a review, a subscription. And then when we post the episodes, make sure you share them and help support. Follow me on Twitter or X. I am at The Dave Dynasty. You can also subscribe to me on YouTube at youtube.com/TheDaveDynasty. You're going to want to check that out. Lots of cool nostalgic wrestling, old school wrestling, all the podcast episodes, all the episodes of my other podcast, Listen to the Screams, the horror podcast, lots of other things. So make sure you subscribe to me on YouTube. And the best way to support the show is financially. You can support by going to prowrestlingtees.com/TheDaveDynasty and buying one of my shirts. Now, a couple plugs I want to talk about really quick. Coming up later in 2024, the WFIA, the Wrestling Fans International Association, will be holding a 3-day virtual convention. It'll be on September 13th, 14th, and 15th. Lots of great guests on there. Ken Patera, Lars Anderson, both guests here recently on the Wrestling Nostalgia podcast. Greg Gagne, Jim Brunzel are going to be there, the High Flyers, and lots of other great guests. For more information, be sure to join today. The perks are just endless with the WFI. It's such a great organization. I am on the board, in full disclosure, but we're doing some great things, have a lot of great things planned. But if you join today, you get all the perks, all the latest news. All you have to do is visit thewfia.org, and then also make sure you go onto Facebook and subscribe, or excuse me, and join the WFIA Facebook group. Now, guys, these are two separate things you got to do, right? Doing one does not constitute the other. If you join our Facebook group, you also need to go to the WFIA.org and sign up there. Again, it's free. You get a bi-monthly newsletter sent to your email. That's really, really great. So make sure you do both of those things so that you can fully get the WFIA experience. Also, while you're out there checking things out, make sure you go and check out the Ultimate Classic Wrestling channel featuring the Savaldi Library. You can go to classicwrestling.net, or you can download their app on Roku, Amazon Fire TV, Apple TV, iOS Mobile, Android Mobile, and many, many more. There's tons of great classic footage on there, and more is being added all the time. It is a really affordable service, and it is more than worth the subscription. So go to classicwrestling.net and sign up for that now. Now, as you may have noticed, there's some tweaks coming here to the podcast, right? You may have noticed at the top of the show, a new little intro put together, something that I felt was a little more fitting for the show and serves better what the intentions and what the motif of the show is. Part of this is that I will be having rotating segments on the show. Each episode will be a different segment, or I may run one segment several times. So it just completely depends on where my mind's at and where my creativity leads me. But I got several segment styles, types, whatever you want to call it, in mind. Some fun stuff to do. So this week, we're going to debut the first segment on the show.
Dave Rants.
And that's right. This first segment that I'm going to unveil is one that I am calling Dave Rants. This is where I'm going to give my unfiltered opinion on wrestling headlines, talents, events, etc. Now, this is not meant should be just an attack or a negative thing, right? Because I try to be a positive guy. I try to keep this as a positive podcast. But let's be frank. There are things in professional wrestling that I don't like, that I don't enjoy, that I feel are unbecoming of this business that we love. So I feel like, hey, I should be able to voice those opinions on my podcast. And it's a respectful thing, right? If you disagree with what I'm saying, that's cool. I'm no harm, no foul. We're allowed differing opinions on these subjects. I'm just going to vent and express what I feel. And I have two things that I'm going to rant a bit about today that have happened recently in wrestling headlines. Now, the first one, let me tell you what happened here. Hulk Hogan has taken credit for discovering The Undertaker. He claims that he met Mark Calloway while filming Suburban Commando. Calloway was an extra on the movie, and that he talked to him, brought it up that, hey, man, he needed to come to New York, and that he brought him to Stanford to meet Vince McMahon. Now, Hulk Hogan, dude, this is bullshit, right? I mean, once again, yet another lie that Hulk Hogan, and a misconstruing of history and storytelling, just trying to hype himself up, keep himself in the headlines, whatever. And I never was a fan of Hogan, right? Wasn't my style of wrestler, wasn't my style of anything. If you are, I'm sorry, I apologize, but you know what? No harm, no foul. It is what it is. But let's, right here, the facts and the details stand, right? Dude, when Hulk Hogan was filming Suburban Commando, The Undertaker was already in the WWE. Mark Calloway was already signed when he was filming Suburban Commando. It was already done. Hulk Hogan, you're full of shit, man. I'm sorry. Point blank, yeah, I mean, like he's listening to the show, but you know what I mean? Hulk Hogan is just full of it, man. He tells so many lies, tells so many stories, tries to keep his name relevant. And again, I'm not knocking the guy's career, because right, he obviously one of the top stars ever in wrestling, name, value, attraction, draw, whatever you want to call it, right up there on the list. Man, just be an elder statesman and quit with this BS crap and making up stories all the time. All right, so let's move on from that one, and let's talk about the one that freaking everybody's talking about, right? So I feel like I need to discuss it just a bit as well. Tony Khan was recently attacked on air by Jack Perry and the Young Bucks. Then he wore a neck brace at the NFL draft. He then, I believe it was on ESPN, he made some comments on air about the WWE and said that they were, quote-unquote, like the Harvey Weinstein of pro wrestling, unquote. Okay. Tony, dude, let me talk about some things here. Let me talk about Tony Khan and this whole deal. And this is not meant, I'm not picking sides in this equation, right? I'm neither here nor there. I'm not a fan of AEW. I haven't been a fan of WWE. I am not a fan of a lot of what they do. There are some improvements made recently that definitely has piqued my interest. But let's keep a couple things in mind. Tony, it's a little classless to do this Harvey bullshit stuff, right? Especially when you got guys like fucking Chris Jericho and whatever else, and some of their story pasts on your payroll that you have, and that you got everybody under the sun signing NDAs. Come on, give me a break. Let's go there, right? Especially on air, it made the announcers or the sportscasters uncomfortable. They swerved away from it quick. Whatever. Now, let's get right to the attack on Khan himself, right? The actual what happened, dude? It was horacious. First of all, Jack Perry, Young Bucks, I can't stand them, man. There's no draw, there's no attraction, there's nothing there, right? They're just not, I don't know, they're nothing to me, right? I used to admire the Young Bucks' marketing and self-motivation prior to AEW when they were on the independents, right? And the fact that they were able to do certain things marketing-wise and merchandise-wise, and that drive they had, I admired that concept, right? That work ethic they had going with that creativity that they had going then to do those things. But man, I'm sorry, right? They've just not, they're not to the level they want to think they are. To me, they don't have a look. They're sloppy, and I just don't think their work in the ring and everything else is that good, right? There's lots of things I do not like about them, not to mention some of the stories you hear about them behind the scenes, whatever else. Now, the thing that gets me, right, is, right, there's lots of wrestlers over the course of time that I don't like. But the thing about the Young Bucks, I don't see growth, right? I don't see anything changing about that over time. They're doing this smug little EVP heel thing. There's nothing creative about this, right? And they're not pulling it off as well as they think they are. And I don't know. I've never, you know, right? There's never any, you know, development in their looks or their physique or their approach or their style, or they're still riding on what got them over in the indies and what worked then. And it's just not translating that great onto the main stage, at least not over time, right? Maybe at first it was all right because they were being exposed to a whole new audience. But it's time, man, guys, it's time to grow a little bit. It's time to do something different. And Jack Perry, I've never been impressed with Jack Perry, man. I never, ever, ever. From his days on the indie till now, just I don't see a lot of redeeming attributes about him, his approach, his career, anything. But then Tony Khan, right? I know everybody says Tony Khan's a good guy. He's a huge fan of wrestling. I get it, all that, right? Is Tony Khan qualified to own a wrestling promotion? Yep, absolutely, right? He's got the financial wherewithal to do it. He has the motivation, the desire. He completely. Is Tony Khan qualified to book professional wrestling? No, right? Could he input some ideas, give some suggestions, have conversations with someone, a booker, a creative head, whatever? Sure, right? He could get, you know, it'd be his company. He could have that talk. He's overworking himself. He's overstretching himself. He does not have enough ideas to write it on his own, and he's taking input and got people in his ears that are not the best people to have there, right? And he's afraid to make anybody mad and tell them no. It's the age old thing, man. Anybody who gets in this position and starts to is such a huge fan and has a promotion or gets on involved with the promotion and starts to make some appearances, you know, online, making announcements, different things. Eventually, it's like they want to become more involved, right? And Tony Khan doesn't have the tools to pull it off. And now a lot of what happened with Perry and the Bucks, that wasn't necessarily all on Tony. It was more Perry and the Bucks. It was horrible. Now let's talk about wearing the neck brace because at the NFL draft, because on the surface, man, I love the idea, right? I love the idea. Sell that sucker. Let's pretend it's real. Let's see it through. Let's act like there's a legitimate injury there. And just because we're on, you know, in the public eye, draw that attention, right? That's, hey, something happened, whatever. So by all means, wearing the neck brace was a right idea. But dude, Tony, if you're going to wear the neck brace, man, sell it all the way through. You can't be turning your head all around. You can't be shifting. You can't be laughing. You can't be spinning your head on a swivel. Because the neck brace alone does not signify the injury. It's also your approach in how you act. And how you have to keep in mind that your neck's supposed to be injured, right? So react like your neck's supposed to be injured. Don't just throw on a neck brace and think the whole world's going to think your neck is injured. It doesn't work that way. So, anyway, I'll give him his kudos, man, for trying with the neck brace, man. And going that extra step in a modern day where people do not do that. Right idea, but he just didn't execute it right. I mean, he just didn't see it enough through. So this whole thing is just, I don't know. It's boring to me. It's not. It's too little, too late. It's not going to happen. I don't know what they're going to do. And where does it go from here? What's going to happen? Right? I mean, I don't know what they're going to pull off next. What they're going to try to do next? It's just not interesting to me. And you know, I know Tony's a nice guy, but man, yeah, this didn't work for me. So there you have it. There's the first installment of Dave Rants. I hope that you enjoyed that. I hope you enjoyed me actually giving some of my opinions that sometimes I bite my tongue and I don't give them, right? I try to walk the line and be a nice guy. But like I said, on here every now and then, I'm going to let it loose. And then if you have a different opinion, that's cool. It's respect. That's why it's an opinion, right? It's our tastes, our views. They can be different. We can still coexist. And I can still respect you. Hopefully you'll still respect me. All right. Well, then let's take a break. And when we come back, we'll have that interview with Justin Reyes, so stick around. This is Listen to Their Screams, a horror podcast that feels like you're chatting with friends. Hello, I am one of your friends, Dave. I am one of the co-hosts of Listen to Their Screams with my friend Ike, and we want you to come and check us out. We are a fun-filled, positive horror movie podcast that does reviews, news, birthdays, anniversaries. We play games. We are a ton of fun every week for you, the horror fan out there. For all of our links to our social media and the podcast platforms, just check out our link tree. It is linktr.ee/listen2screams. That is listen, the number 2, and screams. Or look us up on your favorite social media platform and podcast provider.
Welcome back to Wrestling Nostalgia. This time I'm being joined by the son of Harley Race, Justin Race. Justin, how are you?
Great, Dave. How are you?
I'm doing good. Obviously, you have been a busy guy. Your father has been obviously in the limelight once again, getting some much deserved attention and keeping you hopping.
Yeah, he is. You know, it's interesting with the technological advances of just the last 10 years, even mm-hmm. not to mention 20. I'm constantly meeting kids that are, oh, I know who your father is. I watched him wrestle. I'm like, you were born when he retired. Well, so I'm on YouTube. YouTube.
Yeah,
so the combination of this documentary and this whole new fan base he's developed yep. over the last 10 years, it's just really all hitting all at once. And yeah, I'm hopping all right.
Yeah. Well, it's wild because, I mean, there's always been Harley Race stories, right? And then obviously recently, here a few weeks ago, the Dark Side of the Ring episode aired, which talked about a lot of those stories, some of those stories we've heard over the years. Sure. Let's start with, after you saw the episode, how did you feel? Were you pleased with how it turned out?
Yes, I was. I was very pleased. There was several ways they could have gone with that. I mean, we worked on that for about a year.
Mm-hmm.
And there was several they could have done. You know, they could have focused on a few events that maybe weren't so pleasant, or they could have focused on some other things.
Yeah.
And I thought they pretty much kind of equaled it out. And I wanted to be the equalizer. My memory of my dad is just one of the most hilarious human beings you'll ever meet.
Yeah.
And a great father and a great friend.
Yeah.
And that's how I want my father portrayed to the people that listen to me. And I thought Best Advice, you know, they touched on it is the dark side of the ring. Mm-hmm. So they did touch on some things that were, you know, a little disturbing, but it needed to be done. Mm-hmm. It's not something I'm not used to. That's for sure. When your dad's the heel for 53 years of my life, it happens.
Yeah. Well, I think it was good because I think it, I don't know the right word, humanized him. I mean, I guess maybe it showed that, hey, you know, there is more. There's a man behind this. And while sometimes those lines are blurred, right? I mean, the Harley Race we saw was an extension of sure. Harley Race. But, I think it did a good job, like you said, of balancing, you know, the real man and the portrayed man.
Yeah. The people that, you know, people that saw the show, the episode, most of, they've seen him in the ring. Mm-hmm. They've seen him doing crazy things. They've seen him being tough. They've seen him throwing people around and getting hit with chairs and, you know, yada, 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 yada. But they don't know what he was like at Christmas morning when I was 10 years old.
Right.
You know, that part. And that's the part that I really want to get out. I'm in fact taking another step. It coincides with this documentary coming out. I'm writing a book about my father and I,
mm-hmm.
and the book's title is "Don't Tell Your Mother." And that pretty much encapsulates what it's about.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was great. That was, to me, one of the best things about this episode was some of that family footage. Right. We got to see a lot of Harley with you, with you know, your mom, with at cookouts and being, you know, almost a little goofy at times, right? Making faces at the camera and,
sure.
and things like sure. that. It's because we don't, you know, especially from guys of that era, we don't get to see a lot of that, right? There's not a lot of that exists.
There isn't a lot of history there. I mean, there's history there. There is a lot of recorded history there.
Right, yeah.
My mom, I can't praise her enough, did a wonderful job over my lifetime of keeping all that stuff together.
Yeah.
And whether we move or, you know, this or that, or she moved or he, it, she somehow kept all that stuff together. And there's thousands more. I mean, when they said they wanted things from us from a personal nature, we went to a conference room and set about 8 big boxes of photos and this and that out on this table and somehow delineated them down to one box and sent it to Vice. And they, when they got a couple of days later, they said, this is the most comprehensive view of history of any person we've ever done a documentary on.
Yeah.
Not just Dark Side of the Ring, any documentary.
Yeah.
Because it encapsulated everything. I mean, my mom and dad were photo happy. They love taking pictures of me and they love having their pictures taken with me.
Yeah.
Then you add in, as you were saying, back in the day when they did an interview, of my father, my family, what have you. It was a big production. I mean, a big truck pulls up at the house, and the lighting guys and the sound guys and the production guys and editors, directors, and the on-air personality. And it was a whole day event.
Yeah.
You know, now it's with technology. There's what, a camera and a guy show up, and that's it. Yeah. And it looks the same. You know, it's the same type of quality.
But
what was really neat about that was, again, back then, the photographers would take pictures just you know, the like the guy in the end zone taking pictures of the quarterback, just, you know, the thing just on the high speed, just taking pictures. And that's what they do at the house. And after they finished all this, they'd say, well, we're going to use a couple of these pictures for the newspaper, TV, whatever. And do you want the rest of them? We'd say, sure. Or my mom, thank God, would say, sure. And so there's tens of thousands of photos that of you just being a family, but someone else was, you know, my mom didn't have to take the picture while my dad held me, or, you know, that we had a photographer, a professional photographer taking all these photos.
Yeah.
One is, I posted it online. I thought it was kind of funny. There was a photo of my dad and I playing chess. Mm. It was taken picture. It was taken by a Japanese photographer for a Japanese magazine. And it's a great picture. You know, he's intrigued and I'm intrigued. And we're, yeah. Funny thing is, he didn't know how to play chess.
So was it just post? It was just a post?
Yeah. I mean, if you really look at the chessboard, I'm not even sure the right pieces are on the right side.
That's funny.
I had no idea to play chess.
I was saying, Harley doesn't seem like a chess kind of guy.
That was just him, though. He can fit into any model. I tried to emulate him and be able to fit into every model. There's another one I posted that was kind of funny. You know, Dad was kicked out of school in the ninth grade.
Yeah.
Principal jumped on him and he knocked the principal out, and that was the end of his schooling days. And then 2 weeks before he turned 16, he became a pro wrestler. There's a picture in the foyer of our house where I grew up of my dad with a cap and gown on. And you know how the square of the one of the cap and gowns for graduation is much bigger than the head? His head sticks up beyond the square. I mean, it looks like a little top hat, you know, like a Mr. Magoo top hat on his head.
Yeah.
And I captioned it. I was like, you know, nice picture, Dad, but he never graduated from anything. He graduated from the School of Hard Knocks. That's the only time he'd ever put on a cap and gown in his life. That was mine.
That's funny. Well, you were born in 70.
Those behind the scenes. That's you know, tails into my book. There's little behind the scene moments that people would never.
Yeah. Yeah,
that they relish to hear. It'll make them laugh, and it's just who he was.
Yeah, well, like you were born in 1970, so the yes, majority sir. Of your childhood, your young year, your dad was either the NWA champion or a top contender to the belt. Mm-hmm. So when you went to school, did kids know who your father was? Did they give you a hard time? How did that impact you?
I was very fortunate in the fact that I went to the same school district from about first or second grade on. So kids that, you know, really to second grade or first, they don't really care about too much. Their parents were enamored by who my dad was, but not the kids. And as I grew up, I kept with a lot of the same friends. Some would move in, some would move out, but they kind of grew up with me, with him.
Okay.
So he wasn't hard to race to him. He was the guy that grilled the steaks on Friday night for everybody.
Yeah.
He was the guy that, along with my mom, made the chocolate chip pancakes in the morning after a sleepover. He was just Harley to them.
Yeah.
It was no big deal. Again, their parents were, I'd go over to their house and I'd get an onslaught from my father. They said, what's your dad doing? Who's doing this? My 15-year-old friend, he didn't care.
Yeah.
I mean, they cared, but you know what I mean. They thought it was really neat and an honor. And in fact, now that this is all happening and all of this is coming out again, I'm being contacted by friends that I hadn't talked to probably since high school or college. And they say all those pictures they see of my dad, and they never really thought of how damaging what he did to for business was so damaging to his body and how hard it was on him. And they tell me stories that I remember when he was setting up fold away chairs in the church, like for, you know, a service or whatever, and how he'd pull one apart and he'd break it because he pulled it too hard. So I'm getting all these funny little stories from my friends that have nothing to do with wrestling. They have to do with Dad driving the boat while they water skied, or, you know, just the kind of moments that everyone has. It just, and sometimes in my situation, people want to hear about it more because of who the boat driver was.
Yeah. Well, when he was home, did he ever discuss the business, or did he kind of leave that on the road with him and then just tried to be a dad when he was home?
For the most part. And not to be flippant, but I wasn't that interested. I mean, if it's my dad's coworkers and whatever they're doing, that's fine. All I know is my dad wrestles 300 days of the year and he's home. Mm-hmm. And so it's like a vacation. It's fun time. It's, you know, him, my mom and he, of course, did a lot of things together, but it was, you know, jump in the old Jeep Wagoneer, dad and I, and off we go into the woods, or just, it was fun. So I'd ask him occasionally, especially when I got a little bit older and I got to know some of the guys like Rick or Terry or Ric Flair, Terry Hogan, as men, you know, I was still I grew up with a bunch of uncles, put it that way, a bunch of very famous uncles. And so as I got older, I got a little bit more interested in them and their families. So it was a bit of a mix. At the beginning of my life or the early parts of my life, it didn't really matter. He was just a big, strong dude with a look like one girl said he was in the pool one time and he came up out of the pool with a big man. She said, "You look just like a lion." And someone even mentioned that in one of the communications I've had with someone on Instagram, what have you, said that I remember your dad was the guy that used to launch us around the pool.
Mm-hmm.
At the country club, you know, he was a jungle gym.
Yeah. Well, and you recently, I think you posted a picture of, I think you and Kurt Hennig on the beach, right? Making like sandcastles or something, right? I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah, that was when we lived in Tampa, Florida. Of course, at the time, no big deal to me. He was just a friend of mine. And we were making sandcastles. My dad and Larry were scuba diving. They were spearfishing.
Uh-huh.
So they'd go off. There weren't really a whole lot of laws back then regarding a lot of things that there are laws against now. So we'd pull up on a beach in what have you, Florida, near Tampa or sometimes on the Atlantic side. And they'd stop, they'd pull out their scuba gear, didn't even have BC vests back then, just a tank. And off they'd go out, you know, walk right into the ocean. Now they'd go and spearfish, catch some fish. And Kurt and I and my mom and his mom and, you know, our families, we just hung out on the beach, just a day at the beach. So I came upon that picture. I was like, boy, that's just kind of funny. I mean,
yeah, that's something, man. It's
at the time at the time, it's just a photograph. But then 50 years later, it's a very popular, famous photograph.
Yeah. Well, and you mentioned, you know, some of, you know, your famous, quote unquote, famous uncles, right? You posted some pictures at some shows. So how was there a determination on when, what you went to? I mean, did you just go to major shows in the area? Just, I mean, was there a rhyme or reason, or is it just?
Well, yes, there was. Let me put that loosely. They tried. As I said, he wrestled, and you mentioned from 1970s to 1980s, he was pretty much the world champion.
Mm-hmm.
And traveling 300 days a year, if you want to be with dad, you travel with dad. It doesn't matter what town, what country, whatever. I mean, I'm very blessed to have been to many countries before I was 10, 12 years old. But he, I lost my train of thought. Edit this out. What the heck?
If there was a kind of a method to what shows you were thinking.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I just completely lost
my train of thought. That's okay. That's
all right. So when I was traveling with him, you know, it was more, my mom and I were sightseeing and he was working kind of,
mm-hmm.
That was how we went on vacation. And they had kind of a code between the two of them. When we'd pull into town and my mom would ask him and whatever, you know, however they did it, she'd say, is this going to be a bloodbath or is this going to be a wrestling match? Oh, and he'd tell her, and obviously a bloodbath. Well, her and I'd go to the movies or go play miniature golf or whatever that town had to offer. I distinctly remember going on the river walk in San Antonio, Texas one time with her because we couldn't go to the wrestling matches. So I didn't know it, but I was kept from some of the matches. But that always didn't work because, as you know, wrestling in the 70s and 80s, they got out of hand.
Yep.
They got way out of hand.
Yep.
And he'd be getting hit with the head over the head with chairs and purses and women's purses. And I'd cry and I'd, you know, really be worried. I, you know, think they're killing my father.
Yeah.
And my mom would have to take me out because, I mean, I couldn't take it. And I mean, just imagine, you know, anybody out listening, just imagine your father just, that's his job. He's out there getting blood flying everywhere and whatever. And as I captioned one of my photos that I posted, is my dad bleeding and he's got the belt and he's like holding my mom and I'm standing right next to him. And I said, and blood down him, blood all over my mom. And I said, a successful night at the race house. It's like dad, just a car wreck or something. But no, that's a good night.
Yeah. Well, in the dark side of the ring, right? Your mom talked about sometimes, right? Obviously the travel and how it was, you know, was on her, right? I mean, there was obviously, you know, she spent a lot of time alone and, and not, maybe not, you know, not what you expect when you go into a marriage as a kid. I'm sure with you, maybe you didn't know different for a while, right? I mean, that was just the way it was, but did you ever notice that in your mom? Did you ever notice the loneliness in her?
I really, when it really kind of dawned on me that she was, for all intent purposes, my tutor in school, was one, I think it was in second grade, they went to, mom and dad came to the school, which is an event in and of itself, because all the teachers and the principals and everybody else want to run out and get an autograph. They went to ask if I could be taken out of school for a month to go to Japan, to go on a tour with my dad. And the teachers, principals ever overwhelmingly said, absolutely. He's going to learn more there than he's going to learn here anyway. So then, and as we, as I would, this month progressed and my mom's like, okay, it's time to do math or it's time to do science. Or, and I'm like, no, it isn't. It's time to go hang out at the pool with the wrestlers. She's like, no, it's time to do science. I really started to appreciate that, you know, she put a lot of her life aside.
Yeah.
Because she had to be a dual parent for some things.
Right.
I mean, she had not just, and I'm not talking about like being a mother and a father. I'm talking about being a mother and a teacher. Or a mother and a friend, or mother and a confidant. You know, she took on a lot of hats, and I've always looked up to her for that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, a lot of times that, you know, that's, you know, it's kind of lost it, right? We think of the wrestlers and their side, and yeah, you forget the other side, right? The rest of the family and what they have to endure.
Well, they don't think about, you know what? You know, we have go out to dinner or whatever when he was in town, and we'd go to a restaurant and just talk about my school or whatever, just family stuff, just family conversation. And people would constantly come up and ask for autographs. And sometimes she'd get upset. She'd say, can't they at least wait until we finish dinner or whatever? Yeah. And my dad looked at her and he said, Yvonne, that person paid for this meal. That person paid for the vacation you just went on. That person paid for your car, your clothes, whatever. Justin's college. If it wasn't for those people coming to watch me wrestle, we'd be living in a tent. So we're nice to the people at all costs. And she understood that. And so, and that was ingrained into me. So since I was so young that I was told by my dad when I was old enough to be aware of what was going on, he told me, if someone comes up to you and they recognize you or me or what have you, give them their 5 minutes. If you're not bleeding to death or late for work or something, stop and give them their 5 minutes to talk about when they used to watch me with their dad on Saturday morning. And, you know, do you really know Ric Flair or do you really know Hulk Hogan or who's this? And let them ask their questions. Let be polite. Answer everything you can. And just remember that that is 5 minutes that they'll never forget in their life.
Right. Yeah.
I can't remember all those 5 minute periods, but all those 5 minute periods are remembered by that person.
Sure. Absolutely.
And I, and it's, and it became more of an honor for me. Like, it's an honor for me to talk to you. I, you know, I do podcasts. I've done radio and TV all over the city here. And I was so honored to have on Justin. I'm like, I'm the one that's honored. I mean, my father made such an impact on other people that you all want to talk to me on the radio. I'm the one that's honored.
Yeah.
And I've seen CEOs of companies. I've seen high government officials, whatever. They see, find out who my dad is, and just for a moment, they and their $10,000 suit turn into a little boy in front of me.
Yep.
You can just see the nostalgia and just for a moment. I remember watching your dad when I was with my dad when I was 5 years old. And here's, you know, the CEO of God only knows what company, but that's such an honor for me that I can't thank people enough, really.
Yeah, absolutely. In 1986, Harley went to the WWF, and obviously WWF 86, that's I mean, that's next level, right? That is, you know, we're talking Coca-Cola, Chevrolet, McDonald's brand. Everybody knew the WWF.
Yeah, yeah.
At that time, you were, whatever, about 16 or so. Correct. Did you notice the move to the WWF? Did you notice more people noticing your dad, knowing who your dad was now because of the added exposure? I know he had this huge career, but here he is.
Well, that's when they started doing, they started doing Monday night, you know, events, and they used to, you know, nationally televised events.
Yeah.
Previous to that, it was only pay-per-view. Mm-hmm. So he gained probably more notoriety. He was respected even more by his peers, by the other wrestlers for what he did. And now he had brought the sport from, you know, a couple hundred people in a gymnasium to television, and now to nationally televised events. And he was kind of the grandpa that brought all that to happen, or the godfather of wrestling, and the goat that brought all that about. So they were, I noticed people recognizing him, but the reason I laugh is I remember most him complaining about having to carry that crown around.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love this goddamn crown around everywhere I go. That's the behind the scenes thing. I might have been known more. We might have done a few more television commercials or ads or whatever, or interviews, but I just remember him complaining about the crown.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously, he worked a program with Hulk Hogan, right? That was a huge deal.
Sure.
And the match with Hogan on Saturday Night's Main Event, I believe, was where he suffered the abdominal injury, right? That infamous clip we've all seen of him go through that table, and which was, I mean, essentially the beginning of the end of his in-ring career, right? I mean, that's where it started to affect him from on out. You talked about in the show how much I think he stayed with you, right? Mm-hmm. Recovering from that and everything else, but you know, we've all heard about it, right? The injury, but listening to the Dark Side of the Ring, I mean, it was even worse than what we ever thought. I mean, it was bad, right?
It was 2 days after that televised, you know, that famous television clip that he said, I came home and I found him lying in a fetal position on the family room floor in front of my TV.
Yeah.
And I, for a man that had limitless pain, I never saw him cry. I never saw, no matter how hurt he was, he wouldn't have, hey, I'm fine. To see him, like, I thought he was dead. And I ran up to him and I, you know, forget this. And I, you know, got a pulse, checked the pulse, whatever, called, didn't have any cell phones. So you got to go run to another room to call 911. And came back, and he ended up starting out with, he blew out his intestines. I mean, that's pretty much publicized. He ended up with a colostomy bag, and it was so bad that they had to put a second colostomy bag on him. Somewhere in the neighborhood, I think the doctor said between 500 and 1,000 stitches internally to sew him back together, because it just blew out. And, it was touch and go for a while. It really wasn't. I mean, so much poison had leaked out of his intestines into his body that he was basically dying from poisoning himself.
Yeah.
Internally. So he dropped down. He stayed with me, like you said. I did the best for that I could for care. He got down to 200 pounds, which, if you can imagine, a 300-pound guy weighing 200, but having the same size hands. His hands were still enormous. Yeah. I'll never forget how gaunt and how sick he looked. You know, I can't really describe it other than he just looked ill, like sick, like every breath was a pain in the ass.
Yeah.
But he came back, put the weight back on. He wrestled again. Yeah. You know, he came back from it, which most people wouldn't, but he didn't get the record, name the toughest man on God's green earth for nothing.
Yeah, he earned that one.
Yeah, but it was an emotional period. It was right when I was a junior in high school. Oh. It was rough. It was real rough.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, like you said, he wrestled for a little bit longer, but ultimately, right, he hung it up. And then, Harley still had name value, obviously. So WCW he transitioned over and started managing, and and also ran his own, ended up running his own promotion, his own school, did lots of things, stayed involved in the business. Did you notice difference in Harley? Because doing these things, he wasn't on the road as long, right? He didn't have to go as much. How did he adjust that?
I heard it more from his doctors giving him hell for continuing to get in the ring. He had, by that time, he had had three hip replacements, and the doctor, the final replacement that he had, his doctor told him, he said, "Harley, if you knock your hip out one more time getting in that ring, I'm putting like some sort of belt strap around his hip, basically to keep the ball in the socket."
Yeah.
"And you're going to be uncomfortable as hell, and I don't care because I'm tired of replacing your hips." So it was hard on, I mean, I guess it was hard on him. He took everything in life with in such stride, whether it be tribulation, trial, happiness. He just took everything in stride. And if this part of his life was over, then he moved to the next part, not kicking and screaming. He just moved on.
Yeah, it was still, I mean, it was still some fun work, right? With you know, did some stuff with Vader, some stuff with Lex Luger and stuff. It was still, right? I mean, it was still Harley out there, that name that, you know, it made sense, right? Here's Harley, this multiple-time world champion, everything else, passing his wisdom. So, you know, it made perfect sense.
Passing knowledge along.
Yeah.
And again, you say Vader, and people think of the, you know, Vader in the ring, the big, huge, 400-pound, strong as heck guy. Mm-hmm. And I think about Dad getting very upset with him because he broke every bar stool at Dad's bar in the house, sitting on it. And then my dad wouldn't let him sit anywhere. He said, you big son of a bitch, you're coming to my house, you're going to stand.
That's funny.
So I think of things like that. I went to school in Japan after I graduated college, or as postgraduate work.
Uh-huh.
And I found out Vader was on a tour over there. And I was near Osaka, so I went to the matches there in Osaka. And I got by enough of the Japanese wrestlers recognized me just by who I looked, how I looked, let me back into the dressing room. "Well, Leon, what the hell are you doing?" And I told him, we're going out tonight. Boy, we went out. And getting that guy drank. Holy cow. And he got up to where we got the bright idea about 3 o'clock in the morning, a good idea to call my dad.
Oh, no.
So Leon calls my dad, and I could hear my dad go, "What the hell are you want, you big son of a bitch?" It's like, "Guess who I'm with? Who? Hey, Dad. You son of a, you look just as best to be going to college there." "What are you doing?" "Said, well, I'm going to class tomorrow, Dad."
Well, you talked about, right, Vader being over at your place. There's obvious, I've heard stories that Harley knew how to throw some unbelievable barbecues. The man could cook. Tell us about a Harley Race barbecue.
Well, he had a big, huge smoker you could drag behind the car. And he'd smoke, I don't know, 15 guys were coming over. He'd smoke 10, 12 slabs of ribs, 100 chicken breasts. Just enough. You'd think that 100 people were coming over. And probably the funniest parts of it were weeks, you know, they were fun, and all the guys would joke and whatever. And it was always around 2. You didn't eat after 2 if you're wrestling that night. That's just law that I learned from a little kid. His days later, you kept finding these plates of food in like the linen closet, or because the guys would be worried weren't going to get enough. I don't know why, but they'd fill up a plate and they go and they put it in the closet behind some towels or whatever. And you find the week later, you're like, "What the heck is that smelling here?" Like, "Oh, yes. Good God."
Oh, man.
But he was an entertainer. He and my mother were big entertainers. They threw a lot of parties when I was a kid. We had a basement that had a 7-foot ceiling, a dance floor, bar, pool table, media room, all this stuff. But it had a 7-foot table. Well, when Andre came over, Andre's 7'6". Yeah. And he's another one that wasn't allowed to sit down at my house. except for there was these old church pews. You know, they're about 3 people wide, 3 person wide, solid oak church pews. Uh-huh. The only 2 chairs he was allowed to sit in, or benches he was allowed to sit in the house, and they were by the pool table. So he'd come down the stairs and he'd have to, you know, he'd be bent over like this. There's no way you can describe how big Andre the Giant was. It just, no matter how big you try to make people think he is when they meet him, he's bigger.
Yeah.
By a lot. I mean, the double doors, he can't double, no matter what double doors they are, he turns sideways and bends over to get through them.
Yeah.
So he gets down to the basement. He gets over to his chair, the only one he's allowed to sit in. "Justin, you bring me beer." And that was my job for the night, was to run back and forth from the refrigerator to Andre, bringing him over 120 tall boys, 16-ounce beers.
Uh-huh.
bringing him about 100, and well, I lost track at 100. It must have been 120 or more.
Yeah,
beers, and that's all I did is all night. But I called him Uncle Andre, and he loved me to death, and we had a good time. It's just kind of funny. I'm like, well, I know what my job is for the night.
Yeah, really. It's hard to keep up.
And I'm 12, 13 years old, and I'm becoming a heck of a bartender for a 12-year-old.
Yeah. Well, listen, like you said, so many, I mean, there's so many wrestlers, right, that obviously admire, respect, always looked up to your dad, had this unbelievable Hall of Fame career, right? But we've talked a lot about it. You've mentioned it, right? But you obviously saw the other side, right? The other side of Harley. Mm-hmm. So, guys like me as fans, we think about Harley, we think, oh, the matches, right? How tough he was, mm-hmm. and this and that. When you remember Harley Race, though, what comes to mind first for you? What do you remember?
He was just so funny. He is like, he hardly ever said anything. But if he did, it was hilarious or full of wisdom. You remember, I don't know, years ago, there was a financial firm called E.F. Hutton. Mm-hmm. And their tagline and their commercial was, they'd be in a restaurant. Well, my broker is E.F. Hutton. And E.F. Hutton says, and the whole restaurant gets quiet, When E.F. Hutton talks, people listen. That's how it was with my father, whether it was a dressing room, a party, the golf course, whatever. He'd look up, and you could tell he's going to say something because he'd look around a little bit and kind of formulate. I don't know what he was doing in his head. I knew he wanted what he wanted to say. Finally, he'd start to say, everyone just get quiet and listen. And 30 seconds later, everyone's either rolling in laughter going, boy, that's a heck of a good point. My dad, when it was just him and I, I told this story before. But in 1977, he bought my mom a Porsche. Mm-hmm. And back then, they didn't have manufacturers all over the world. You bought a Porsche, it was handmade in Germany and sent here. Mm-hmm. So we get this car, and he and I take off, and we go out onto this highway where it kind of goes past the county, so far out in the county that there really weren't enough at that time police to patrol, mm-hmm. Out there.
Yeah.
And at this time, the speed limit's 55 everywhere. There wasn't a 75, 60, whatever.
Yeah.
So we get on this road and off we go. And when you see a police officer at that speed, what are you going to do? So the officer went. You remember the movie Smokey and the Bandit with the roadblocks? The cars would pull, the policemen would pull up nose to nose, and they'd sit with the guns over the hood and over the trunk of the car. Well, they set up a roadblock. And so we come up to this roadblock. About 10 of the guys, 10 of the officers come, kind of in a semicircle and wrapping around the car. All of them had their hands right on their belt. They were ready to draw their gun. One guy broke up and he walks over the car. He looks down on that Porsche and my dad at the driver's side and he says, Mr. Race, do you have any idea how fast you were going? And dad said, well, the speedometer was pegged at 150. Not denying anything. And the officer said, sir, you are going 163 miles an hour. You are tripling the speed limit. And Dad said, wow, and I saw you. I was letting off. Again, okay. He said, well, officer, it's a new car. I'm breaking it in. And the officer says, well, now that it's broken, the speed limit is around 55, please. And he goes, all right. So we turn around and take off going back toward home. No ticket, no nothing. And he looks over at me. Don't tell your mother.
thus the title of the book, right?
Yes. I heard that so many times in my life. And even to this day, as the book is moving forward, I'll tell a story to someone like, you all in the air or just out someplace. She'll you guys did what? I'm 53 years old. And she's like, you did what when you were 8? And I never heard about it. Well, he said, don't tell me, mother.
Well, tell us more about the book. Tell us, the plans. How's it going?
It's just it's a lighthearted, not chronological. It's not a history lesson on Harley won the belt in 1973 against so and so and this. It's stories about us. Stories at the time, sometimes that maybe seemed a bit dangerous. You look back and they're like, that was pretty dangerous, but it's funny now. Mm-hmm. Well, like having a 7-year-old in the car driving 163 miles an hour, you'd be in jail for a long time now for child endangerment and whatever.
Yeah.
So it's a series of, and I have hundreds, I probably write 3 books of stories that that put him in a different light, really, as you mentioned about the vice, humanize him. Mm-hmm. I mean, humanize him even more because he was just dad. The thing was, if he hadn't been who he was and dad, he would have went to jail. arrested. You know, I mean, some of the things that we did were not, you know, he'd have gotten a lot of trouble if he wasn't who he was. It's just, I just want to make people laugh. I want them to look at him as, oh, well, I wish that guy would have been my dad, or I wish that guy would, or that guy, that everyone has those kind of stories. So yeah, my dad used to, you know, and that's the title, that my dad and I did this and that and whatever. And he told me not to tell my mom. And that's why I titled it that, because people look at that title and it instantly stories of their own come to mind. Everyone, I guarantee you, has a story that dad and them did something. Don't tell your mother.
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely. And there, am I right? Is there another, a full length documentary in the works? On her?
Well, besides the Vice doing something else, there's talk of some other projects moving forward. Okay. I'm not at liberty to say right now, but there, I might. If I was a fan, I'd look for something.
good. I mean, you know, there's obviously right.
My mom's writing a book as well, but hers is more of like a memoir, like a chronological. You know, this was hardly how we met and how we progressed through life.
Yeah.
So again, very humanizing, but I just chose to pick all the funny things out and tell about them.
Yeah, and I mean Harley had a book, right? He wrote a book with
yes, he did.
And so this is, yeah, it's kind of nice. We have all the aspects there, all the yeah, various things. Well,
his was like nearly 20 years ago,
right?
So sure. There was it. What he didn't have the opportunity of publicity like that. You know, it was a podcast 20 years ago.
Yeah, but something now.
I'll be in fact that his book, I wrote the foreword to his book,
mm-hmm.
and Bret Hart wrote a foreword to it as well.
Yeah.
But he, you know, at the time it was hard to get exposure unless you got on Good Morning America or right. the Today Show, you know, that was your exposure, or if you got on the nightly news. Nowadays, with publicity being the way it is, every time I do a podcast, I get three more requests for doing another podcast because they saw me on your podcast, and yep. it just keeps growing and growing. And I would feel that my dad wouldn't ever think that, like, you know, he was famous and now I can be famous, because he would say, if you don't use what I did all my life to do something for yourself within your own family, then you're an idiot.
Sure.
Yeah, I can hear him saying that from heaven right now. It's like, come on.
Well, I mean, it's what every father wants for their kid, right? I worked all this to try to give you an opportunity, or make things a little easier, better for you. And
yeah, and I knew at a very young age that I was not filling those shoes.
Did you ever consider wrestling?
Well, my parents kind of kept me away from it. I mean, I wrestled collegiate. I started mm-hmm. when I was 7. And wrestled all the way through high school. I won several state national championships. But they kind of kept, I went to the shows, but they kept me away from the business. It makes perfect sense to me. I'm not sure that it does to you, but they didn't, my dad, he would coach me on not being a wrestler. I mean, use your head, not your body. It's a hell of a lot easier on yourself. You don't end up like me, gimping around when you're 45 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And the time that he spent away from the family, that was a pretty easy sell for them to me, was you don't want to do this because look how much you miss your dad. And every time we drove him to the airport, I'd cry all the way to the airport. Yeah. And I knew, I don't remember anymore, but I think it was somewhere in the 3,000 seconds that it took to drive from our house to the airport. Because when we go to pick him up, I'd count the seconds.
Yeah. Yeah.
And sitting in the car with my own, you know, little kid. And so when I got a little bit older and we started talking about that kind of stuff, I'm like, yeah, I don't want to, that's too hard. I don't want to, yeah. I don't, I'm used to it. My dad did it, but I don't necessarily have to do it for my family.
Sure. Absolutely.
So he said, get educated, be him. You want to, you know, I tried to be a professional football player. I went to college on a scholarship for football Division I, but I had injured my neck in a wrestling match, ironically, when I was a sophomore in high school, and I couldn't play football anymore.
Yeah.
So that ended any type of athletic prowess that I wanted.
Yeah.
But I'm glad that I have some aches and pains of my own, but my dad was my age. I probably thought he wouldn't be walking.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sure. When you're watching your dad get hit and beat up like that when you're 8 years old, you're like, by the time he's 50 or 60, he ain't going to be walking, nonetheless know who he is.
Yep, absolutely. So, is there you got the books on, working on, you and your mom working on books. You said there's other projects being discussed that may, might happen. All this stuff, right? All this new exposure on your family and your dad. Is there anywhere a centralized way that people can kind of watch for things on the world of Harley race and any merchandise or documentaries or books as this stuff progresses? Is there an easy way for people to follow, or is it mostly channeling through you?
It mostly channels through me now. It's kind of like media nowadays, and publicity is kind of like a tree with branching out. I talk to you, which facilitates a conversation with someone else, and then there, and then all of a sudden,
Sure.
this guy has a doll that no one else has, and he puts it out there. And hey, I have, and I do my best because I know my father would not only want but expect of me to respond to every correspondence I get. I apologize to your listeners and whatever right now that it's not always immediate. It's not always within a day or two, but I try to get back to every Instagram, every Facebook tweet, what have you, email, text that I get, because I'm like he was and I listened to what he said. These are the people that made him famous. And if they want to talk to me, I try to be as open and as available as possible. My email is J is just Bob's, JustBobs at att.net. You can find me on Facebook, Justin Race. Instagram is just Bobs, but you can also find me under Justin Race on Instagram. And I urge people that anybody drop me a line, I will get back to you. Even if it's a thumbs up, it's,
It's something.
I'm thinking, well, yeah, I'm thinking about them. I take it. And then there'll be the people that, tell you quite a story. It's like, take me a few minutes to read this. But when you get to the end, it's like, wow, they think so much of my father that just hearing about the dark side of the ring, or just hearing about me, or seeing a picture on Facebook or whatever, inspired them to reveal that story to me about them and their dad or whatever it was. It's inspiring. It's very, it really makes you think of what's important and who you are and the impact you can have. And if I'm having a bad day, I know there's someone that's having a much worse day. And if I can do anything to make someone's day, make them chuckle, with a story or whatever, that's kind of what I'm planning on doing.
Well, that yeah, I mean that's very admirable. Like I said, I will obviously help, right? If I see you post anything, new developments in anything,
Sure.
right, on the book, or whatever else, I will obviously, I'm a huge fan of your dad's, and highly supportive of anything you do. So I'll do my part to help spread the word as well.
I have
And
that box that the all the boxes, but there's boxes of photos that my mom and I went through to, and like I said, there's so many thousand more, and people are really entertained. They like to see the head flying head button, this and that when I post them, but they've seen that before, or fans of, especially big fans of, they've seen all those kind of pictures. So I'm going to have to go reload, so to speak, my pictures with, him and I when I was a baby, and all the pictures that the fans really come back and say, thank you for opening up and sharing your life with us or with me or whatever. And
absolutely.
that's what I want to do. I mean, I got a picture on there, me, him. I don't even remember if it was from prom or something, but him, doing my bow tie. And there's a picture,
I
just a
remember that.
father son thing. I'm laughing at, and I captioned it. I said, he was probably saying, you're getting too damn tall, you son of a bitch.
Well, and Justin, I appreciate you giving me your time. And like you said, I appreciate you sharing your dad with us, right? With the whole world. I
Well,
mean,
thank you.
you mentioned it, the rough moments, right? Taking him to the airport and the things that you missed out, right? I mean, some of the time that some of the rest of us get with our fathers, you didn't have because of his profession, but because of that, in our own ways, the rest of the world got to share with your dad and become a fan of his.
And
And
I'm happy to do it. I
and
really am. I truly
I
am.
appreciate that. So,
And then again, it's the honor is all mine.
well, absolutely. I don't know about that, but but I appreciate your time, and I'm glad we got to talk. And again, hopefully, as things develop and further projects, and maybe when it gets book release time, we can have you back on and plug some of that again
Appreciate that.
and talk a little more. So.
I appreciate that. Anytime, Dave.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Whatever time you are listening to this, wherever you are listening to this is Greg Pine's Old School Wrestling Talk in, well, ad form. Hi, everybody. My name is Greg Pine. I'm a former professional wrestler. I was trained by Adrian Street in the Skull Crusher Shed in Gulf Breeze, Florida, and then later mentored by Golden Boy Jerry Gray at state fairs across the country. And later, I was an actor who was on 24. I'm currently the film commissioner for Otsego County, New York, which includes Cooperstown and the Baseball Hall of Fame. I'm also trying to produce a movie, and I've got a lot of fun stories about working at the Sharper Image in Beverly Hills, California that I throw in as well. Like everybody else, I've got a podcast, and mostly I talk about the things that I love, which is old school territory wrestling, especially Southern wrestling, especially Texas wrestling, and I think I've got maybe one of the most extensive collections of Houston wrestling programs in the world. So I pull them out all the time to talk about old school angles. I'm working on getting Morris Siegel and the Junkyard Dog into the Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame. So if you're a voter, please check in with me and look at my papers. And I'd love it if you guys would check out my podcast, because I need a few more fans and a few more exotic places. We're heard everywhere from Frankfurt, Germany, to Houston, Texas, to Cooperstown, New York, and in between. So please check us out at Greg Klein's Old School Wrestling Talk, every place that you get your wrestling talk. And follow me on Twitter at JYDBook.
All right, and welcome back to Wrestling Nostalgia. I am Dave Dynasty. Thank you to Justin Race for coming on and chatting with me. Hopefully you enjoyed that episode. Like I said, Justin's out there everywhere. If you have not seen the Dark Side of the Ring episode on Harley Race, go check that out. Go search for Justin Race out there. He's on, been doing a lot of podcast appearances and everything else. So go listen to him. Such a great guy. It's so admirable how he's maintaining his father's legacy and helping keep that alive. And I wanted to do my part and have him on and chat with him. Next week's episode features another great guest. We have the Perfect 10, Baby Doll. Nicola Roberts will be on the show to chat with us about her career, her time in the NWA, feuding with Jim Cornette, et cetera, et cetera. Her daughter. She has a daughter now in professional wrestling. We're going to talk all kinds of things with Baby Doll, so make sure you check that out next week. Please, like I said earlier, please go and join the WFIA. It is free. You receive a bi-monthly newsletter. Visit the WFIA.org. Sign up today. Guys, thank you for listening. Hopefully you enjoyed the tweaks to the show. Hopefully you enjoyed the new intro music. Hopefully you're going to like the little outro music it's coming to. It's a little different, too. Hopefully you enjoyed the first unveiling of the new segments. Dave's Rants, hopefully you like hearing me do that. Like I said, I have lots of ideas about segments that will come in the future, so it won't always be me ranting. There'll be some other things tied up in there, too. I'm just trying to have a lot of fun while supporting wrestling history and keeping you entertained. And hopefully I am doing that. And if I am, please make sure you help support us by subscribing to us, by rating and review us, and by sharing my posts, the episodes, everything else, and tell a friend. Right? If you know somebody that appreciates professional wrestling and professional wrestling history, tell them, hey, go check Dave out. He's a fun guy. And if you don't believe that, then, just lie. Play a trick on him. Anyway, until next episode, when I'll be joined as a guest with Baby Doll. Wherever you go, whatever you do, be good, be safe, and always keep on crowing.
Fans, we brought you All-Star Championship Wrestling. This is Sam Menaker thanking you for being with us and saying until next time, so long, everyone.